Hello, my name is Maximilian Pfau. I'm an IRD specialist at the University Eye Hospital Basel, Switzerland.
And I'm Graham Black. I'm a professor of genetics and ophthalmology in the UK.
We'll continue our discussion on IRD fundamentals.
So previously we were discussing best practices for diagnosing IRDs, including recommended diagnostic tests, clinical elements needed, and early symptoms to watch out for.
Today, we'll be learning how to help to communicate with patients about their diagnosis to enable them to navigate the process and to maintain an optimistic outlook.
So very often, IRD specialists are required to be experts in communication. Trying to explain a diagnosis to a patient is a challenging task. Do you have strategies that you use to tailor your approach to patients with different levels of understanding of medical knowledge?
I think it's really important to take quite a bit of time with the patient and also try through some interrogation to make sure that the patient understood what you've just said, because there are two misconceptions which I repeatedly encounter. So I had it several times happen to me that I had patients with clearly autosomal recessive diseases that then went on to tell me that they decided not to get children because they're worried that the children have the disease. And that's one example where I think it's really, really important to make sure, once you explain them the diagnosis and explain them it's autosomal recessive, to really make sure to understand what that means in terms of inheritance. The second part where I see a huge amount of confusion is the term blindness. I don't know if it's just German websites or also websites in the UK, but it's often used interchangeably, the term blindness and legal blindness. And I've repeatedly encountered Stargardt patients. Of course, they can have a severe generalized dystrophy, but some genotypes, like this 1961 genotype, is just bullseye maculopathy and will stay for that for most of their life. So it's extremely important to me to communicate to them, yes, you're going to be legally blind, and that means problems with recognizing faces and problems with reading. But when it comes to everyday activities of living in your house, cooking, going outside,
navigating,
that will be totally fine. You're not going to be blind in the sense of everyday language blind.
So I think the other area is around genetics, trying to allow individuals, families, space to understand the implications of an inherited disorder. And there are feelings of fear, guilt, anger. That's where genetic counselors can be absolutely valuable in helping to comprehend the nature of it, but also to start to move forward to promote family decision-making. I'm fortunate enough to work in clinics with genetic counselors, and they can spend time explaining things, very often explaining things for a second time and trying to understand if the patient has got what I've said. So I think that's important. I think understanding where patients are coming from is important as well. Understanding what their prior thoughts are, and this is where your views of blindness, I think, is really important. Patients are really frightened of having no light perception. The majority of patients we see will retain some light perception for a great deal of time, if not for their whole lives. And so being clear about terms is really important. We use a lot of tools. We've got tools for drawing pedigrees, tools for showing people fundus pictures and so on. And then the last thing that we do, we write to our patients rather than to their doctors. I don't know what you do in your country.
But to be honest, we don't do that. But now that I hear it, I think it's an excellent practice.
Yeah, it was something that I learned through clinical genetic training, where they're communicating either with individuals or with families, and we send the same letter to the doctor, but actually everything's directed to the patient, who at the end of the day are the ones making the decisions. Do you have any strategies for ensuring that patients get to understand what you're saying?
We encourage them very actively to not come alone, but also always to come.
Yes, of course.
Of course, children come with their parents, but also once they're older, we strongly encourage them to come with at least one or two confining persons.
Yes, which is important. So, although one of the challenges that you can end up with is having multiple family members in the clinic, all of whom have the same condition. And that can certainly increase the communication challenges.
I don't have much to add. The one thing which really helps me is those sub-organizations which are part of Retina International. So in Germany, that would be Pro Retina. In Switzerland, it's Retina Swiss. In France, it's Retina France. And patients that get connected to them early on, they often improve massively in terms of well-being, just because they get to know other patients, they get a more realistic view of their disease and what it means for everyday life. So I think it's extremely helpful that they have like clinics from patient to patient.
Yeah, and other support groups is important. And then there are other charitable organizations regionally that support individuals with visual impairment. How about in your country?
We really encourage them to use their resources. And then in addition, if it's, especially if it's children or people younger than, let's say, 25, we are very much pushing them towards getting visual rehabilitation to ensure that their whole school and education doesn't get sidetracked.
Yeah. Yes.
For older people, of course, we offer the service, but then it's more to them to also take the initiative.
Yeah. And for children, intensive contact between the community, school, and the hospital, and ensuring that the communication is optimized is really important. And as you say, children only get one chance at education, and so ensuring that whatever steps are possible are made to overcome that, I think, is really important. Yeah. So patients have to adapt to their circumstances. Individuals with visual impairment find a range of strategies. What are the ones that you promote and advise, and the ones that you've seen are the most useful?
I think it's extremely important that patients are connected as soon as possible to a low vision advisor. Of course, that depends on your local country, what types of services are there that are for free. And then, of course, they need to be equipped. So for the older generation, it usually means to have an illuminated hand magnifier to go to restaurants and be able to read. And at home, to have like a small tabletop video magnifier, and also a large tabletop video magnifier for the important documents. Then, besides of those traditional low vision aids, there is of course now this huge spectrum of devices that can help a lot. For Android phones, there is apps like the One Step Reader, which just can take a picture and perfectly reads everything for you. For Apple iPhones, for a very low vision patient, there's this whole voiceover toolbox, which essentially allows you to control the phone and use everything without any vision, which is also, many patients find it extremely beneficial. And then there's other equipment like the OrCam, which is also becoming increasingly popular. So I think it's really important to inform patients. There's both these traditional low vision aids, but then there's a lot of new devices coming up. Also some quite good YouTube channels like The Blind Life, which provides reviews on all those types of devices. Understanding the fundamentals of IRD is essential to avoid misdiagnosis and help patients to adapt to their IRD diagnosis.
By continuing to educate yourself on the latest development in IRD diagnosis and management, you'll be better prepared to help patients enjoy better post-diagnostic outcomes. Thanks for watching.